All right. Okay, let's come back to order. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3631. Invite Representative Buckley forward. And do you want to bring Kendra with you? Okay. And ask Mr. Stembridge to review the bill.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3631 directs the governor to seek to ensure that agricultural production appointees to the State Board of Agriculture include direct marketers of their agricultural commodity production.
Welcome back to the Rules Committee. Welcome to the Rules Committee.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hunt, Co-Chair Olson, members of the committee. I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County and the legislature. This bill is hopefully a little simpler than the last one you were going over. I'll tell you the quick story behind it. In the interim, I was approached by the Friends of Family Farmers, some folks in Jackson County in particular, living in Talent or outside of Talent, and I was so tremendously impressed with this group of people younger than Representative Wingard, then they are establishing their own businesses as small farmers in Jackson County, Josephine County, Klamath County, all throughout the state. And it's a new generation of farmers, and they're coming at this with an incredibly creative, innovative approach to having their businesses thrive in our communities. And one of the key parts of their business plan, one of the key parts of what they want to do, is produce products that are consumed, personally consumed, here in our state. Fresh products from the farm for our communities. That's part of their central part of their being. They are getting national attention. They have been written up nationally as the new generation of farmers in Oregon that are basically entering into this field and doing it in a way that is going to pay off for years to come. They're going to revitalize how farming is done in Oregon. It's going to revitalize the small family farm. We put together a bill on their behalf. We went to the Ag Committee, and several pieces of it got pulled out for different reasons. Most of you, I believe, voted for the 1,000 chicken bill earlier in this session, which allows small farms to process 1,000 chickens. There was a raw milk proposal that got some concern over it, so we withdrew that because there just simply wasn't enough support for that part of their proposal in terms of producing raw milk. This is another part of their overall proposal, and it's very simple. It's simply encouraging the governor. We're going to pass a bill to encourage the governor. But it's symbolic, but it's important. This new generation of farmers wants to have a seat at the table. It's that simple. And I passionately believe they should have a seat at the table. They should be part of the discussion on the future of farms in our state, and by giving them a seat at the table, encouraging the governor to give them a seat at the table. We're not requiring the governor to do anything. We're encouraging the governor to give a seat at the table of producers in agriculture that sell their products within our state. That's really all this does. By giving them a seat at the table, their voices are going to be heard, their creativity, their innovation will be part of our overall agricultural industry in the state of Oregon. So I appreciate your time and consideration. I hope you'll support the bill.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Co-Chairs Olson and Hunt, my name is Kendra Kimbaroskis, and I'm with Friends of Family Farmers. For those of you who don't know of Friends of Family Farmers, we're a grassroots organization promoting sensible policies, programs, and regulations that protect and expand the ability of Oregon's family farmers to run a successful land-based enterprise while providing safe and nutritious food for all Oregonians. We represent over 2,300 Oregonians and have members in every single county in this state. Who are our members? Our members are what we call farm direct farmers. These are people that are producing their products and they're selling them to the end user, the customer, at farmers markets. They're selling them to a CSA, if you're familiar with that, it's community supported agriculture. It's like a subscription farm where you pay a fee each month and then you have food arrive at your door depending on what's fresh and in season. And these are people who are selling their products off of the farm. One thing that I think is really important to note is that the Director of Agriculture in the state, Director Katie Koba, often talks about Oregon agriculture as a three-legged stool, and each leg represents a different portion of the types of farmers that are producing food in Oregon. The first leg is those producers who are producing products specifically within the markets that are meant for in-state, so those farm direct market farmers. The second leg represents farmers who are producing products for the regional market, so Washington, California, Idaho, Oregon. And then the third leg is those farmers that are producing their products for the national or international markets. The interesting thing to note about that description is that the two legs, the leg that represents farmers that are producing their products for regional markets and the leg that represents farmers producing products for national markets, often have very good representation in this building and at the Board of Agriculture. Those markets those farmers who are engaged in direct market production, the local level, the within the state of Oregon level, don't have good representation in this market. And although, inside this building or with the ODA, or Board of Ag, and although that the Director Koba and the Department of Agriculture has made great strides in trying to reach out to the direct market farmers over the last several months, our farmers are still feeling incredibly disconnected from what's happening here in the building and at the Board of Agriculture, largely because they're farming. They don't have any commodity commissions. They don't have they don't have paid lobbyists in the building. I'm a volunteer lobbyist, so you know, I farm as well. And so they don't have a means to provide upward feedback to the Board of Ag. And so we feel that ideally the original bill that Representative Buckley spoke about would carve out two positions on the Board of Agriculture for the kinds of farmers that we're talking about. The agribusiness lobby fought that. They didn't want that. And so what we have come to you with is a bill that we feel is a really good compromise. It's a bill that only directs the governor to consider this direct market farmer when making appointments to the Board of Agriculture, because chances are they're not going to have lobbyists weighing in on the appointments like the other commodities will have. And so we feel that it's a good compromise. It doesn't mandate that he or she, if it's a future governor, appoint anybody specific, but it just encourages them to remember that there is a specific farmer in Oregon who might not be at the table because they're busy farming. And so with that, I ask you to and encourage you to support this bill. You will hear from the agribusiness lobby that they don't want to have that there's 240 commodities in Oregon, and so they don't want to carve out specific seats for commodities. This is not what we're doing. We're not carving out anything. We're simply asking that the governor remember that there is a direct market farmer constituency in the state. And I would argue probably the constituency of Oregon agriculture that is on the rise and growing, as Representative Buckley mentioned. We have had a direct market farmer recently appointed to the Board of Agriculture, Laura Masterson. We're very thankful to former Governor Ted Kulongowski for doing that. However, this market constituency of farmers, as we move into further administrations, we feel that it's imperative that they be remembered when making ag policy in the state. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions, please, witnesses. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Hunt. And thank you, Co-Chair Buckley, for bringing this. As a fellow Southern Oregon legislator, and knowing that you are from the furthest southern part of Oregon, I have to ask a little bit of definition on this direct market farmer concept, and I'm sure you'll know this answer. Would a person that holds has the ability to be a grower for medical marijuana be considered a direct market farmer?
Representative, thank you for the question, Co-Chair and Representative. Given that a current Oregon law surrounding the medical marijuana program does not allow for the production of medical marijuana for sale, that currently that would not be a direct producer.
Thank you for that clarification.
But Representative Buckley would be happy to work with you on legislation to change that. Further questions for these witnesses? Thank you both very much. Appreciate it. Do you have a question for them?
Tell me your name again.
It's Kendrick Imbaraskis.
Kendrick?
Kendra.
Kendra. Thank you. I'm hoping you will help me. You used the term agribusiness at least twice. Can you define that for me?
When I use the term agribusiness, I'm talking about those the industry that has representatives in the building on a daily basis that are attending Board of Ag meetings or lobbying on behalf of the agricultural industry. I want to be very clear, Representative Wingard, co-chairs Hunt and Olson, that our intention is not to exclude anybody from this discussion. We just want to ensure that our farmers are included in the discussion.
Follow up? Is that weird?
Aside from the merits of this bill, I hope that your organization has taken note of the Farmers Market Bill that passed out of the House, and I hope will pass out of the Senate as well, which I think is a critical piece of legislation for the folks who do what you do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, if I can toot my own horn for a second, might be the most significant piece of legislation related to your industry that comes out of the legislature this session.
Representative Wingard, co-chairs Olson and Hunt, I want to first off thank you so much for all your work on that bill. Our members have definitely noted how much time and effort you put into that bill and all your comments on the floor in support of family farmers and farmers markets. And I was actually in the back of the room writing an action alert while I was preparing to come up here to make sure that our farmers know that there's going to be a hearing in the Senate side this coming week on that bill.
One last follow-up. I really wasn't saying that to achieve a thank you. I just wanted to make the point that bill alone, I think, is a pretty good achievement for your organization if that's all that were to happen, and I'm not suggesting that is. So when I heard you testify, I was concerned that maybe you felt that the legislature wasn't keyed into the kinds of issues that your organization has been bringing to the legislature, and I think we have all heard them, and we are trying to be responsive and helpful mm-hmm. to this budding Representative Freeman and thriving industry in Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
I'd like forward Barry, Terry, and Roger.
Barry, Terry, and Roger.
Welcome to the House Rules and Agriculture Committee.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hunt, Co-Chair Olson, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. My name is Barry Bashu. My wife and I farm near Boring, Oregon. We have a large, or actually a very diverse, I should say, horticultural operation, the vast majority, but we sell directly on the farm, or we sell at the local farmers market in Gresham, which has been very successful for it. I didn't realize until today that I was neither vital nor underrepresented, but I'm pleased to tell you that I'm neither. I am here today to talk in opposition to giving preference to certain types of farmers serving on the Board of Agriculture. The Board of Ag reached out a number of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, with the intent of engaging the agricultural community, and were very successful at doing so under the leadership of Bernie Faber, who was the chair at the time. There was a lot of discussion about making sure that the whole of agriculture was served well by the board, and I believe that the past governors and the current governor have been very successful in working with the director of agriculture in selecting good, solid board members of agriculture that represent a broad diversity of the various commodities that we raise in the state. I'm very proud of the actions that the board did, and I would hope that this particular bill does not undo those actions, and I'm very concerned about it, obviously. Oregon farmers and ranchers do raise a number of different diversities, and we thrive on that diversity, and it's important that the Board of Agriculture does try to represent that diversity. But in fact, the existing statute already directs, and I quote, "The governor shall seek to ensure that the appointed board members who produce agricultural commodities reflect the diverse nature of agricultural commodity production within the state." And I'm not an attorney, but when I read this language, the next insert, which is what this bill is all about, I believe does mandate the governor, because it clearly says, including, but not limiting to, producers who engage in the direct marketing of their agricultural commodity production to consumers. The agricultural community has worked long and hard to develop a cohesive, collaborative representation across the state and an understanding of the importance of all kinds of agricultural production methods, all kinds of marketing methods, all kinds of sales methods. We take a lot of pride in that. We've worked very, very hard to be inclusive. To pass a bill which singles out a specific type of marketing or a specific type of farming or a specific type of production method undoes a lot of the work that has been done over the last several years. We, too, are a grassroots organization. We're an organization that represents a large number of farmers that range anywhere from very, very small to very, very large. Production methods including organic, sustainable, traditional, conventional, large commodity-based, small commodity-based. I'm the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau. I'm very proud of that. I've worked a long, hard number of years to be involved in agriculture. My farm is small. It's my wife, my three children, myself, and sometimes we have to bring in some help during harvest. Today, I spend all morning setting up our farm market because we open on Saturday. And if you need flowering baskets, please come and see us. You pick strawberries. We do you pick tomatoes. You pick vegetables. We have a large community base of folks who come to us year after year after year because they trust us, they like us, they enjoy us. We like them. My wife and I started the retail operation about 10, 12 years ago with a card table out in front of the house selling crates of strawberries so my kids could raise some money. That's where it started. We're still very, very small in comparison to many, many of the larger direct farm marketplaces, but we take pride in the product. We take pride in the relationship we have in our community. I don't feel disenfranchised. I don't feel as if I should have to have a specific representative on the Board of Agriculture. I think it's an unfortunate bill. We oppose it, and I would hope you would vote against it. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Terry.
Thank you, Chairs, member of the committee. My name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I have written testimony. I won't read it. In deference to time, I'll just jump to the last paragraph. I agree with what Barry had said. We have concerns that changing the criteria by which Board of Agriculture members are selected, we don't think serves all Oregonians. The current selection criteria have served the public well and should continue to reflect the diverse nature of the more than 220 different agricultural crops grown in Oregon, and we shouldn't get hung up on how they're grown, where they're grown, or to whom they're sold, or how they're sold. We shouldn't be differentiating by how these products are marketed. I think we should be picking our representatives on the Board of Agriculture based upon the criteria that they serve agriculture well, and that they represent the diversity. There's no reason why a direct marketing farmer cannot have a seat on the board. It's not precluded in the current criteria. We agree that singling out marketing types sets a bad example, particularly if you start to realize that 80% of the agricultural crops grown in the state of Oregon are exported outside of the state, whether it's regionally, nationally, or internationally. I guess one could say then that maybe what we need to do is establish criteria that says 80% of the producers on the Board of Agriculture should be exporters. I think it sets a dangerous precedent, and we would be opposed to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Roger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association and the Oregon grass seed industry, a true grass seed or grassroots organization. We, too, both organizations are opposed to this bill as drafted. We believe the current law does allow for the governor to make appointments. The governor has proven he was willing to make appointments of these type of farmers. We are not opposed to those appointments on the board. We just believe that all farmers should have an equal opportunity to be appointed to the board regardless of how they market their product. Many dairy farmers, many grass seed farmers may qualify for these type of appointments because they do sell directly off their farms. But with that, we're still opposed to that idea because we think the current law is very clear that all of the board needs to reflect the diverse nature of all agricultural commodity production within the state. And therefore, we think that does a good job. There are also two public members who are not actively engaged in the production of agricultural commodities. So maybe that is where the governor could put people in. If they are part-time farmers, they would maybe fit the non-commodity section that where there already are two people pointed out to the 9-member board, actually 10-member board, because we got a the soil water conservation director is all or chairman is also part of the board. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but we are both organizations opposed to this legislation.
Thank you. Any questions for these witnesses? Seeing none, thank all three of you. The other person who signed up, Jim Welsh, I don't think is in the audience. Anyone else? Director Copa, did you want to speak to this? Okay. Appreciate you being here. Anyone else wanted to testify on this? Seeing none, I would close the public hearing on House Bill 3631. So, colleagues, of the three remaining, on the first one, we're waiting for fiscal. We're going to get an update on where that is and where the amendments are from Representative Barnhart. House Bill 3576, we're going to carry over to next Wednesday. 3576, we're going to carry over to next Wednesday. And let me, since 3148 is very brief, let's do that one first, and then we'll move to an update from Representative Barnhart. So let's open a work session on House Bill 3148. 3148, Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, you've seen this bill several times. So this is for signatures required for including materials in the voters' pamphlet. Requires state senator and state representative signatures to be those of active electors of the candidate's electoral district. You have the -6 amendment, which is the sponsor's preferred amendment. It reduces the required signatures from 300 to 200. It defines active elector and it deletes proposed restrictions on signatures submitted by political party or assembly. Mr. Chairman, each of these provisions have been in previous amendments. This is the only amendment that has this particular combination of provisions. You have fiscal and revenue impact statements that say no revenue impact, no fiscal impact on the -6.
Very good. So we are in a work session.
Chair, I move the -6 amendments into House Bill 3148.
Co-chair also moves the -6 amendments to House Bill 3148. Discussion. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Hunt. I just have a question about the revenue statement. I thought the whole intent was to help gather revenue for the Secretary of State to pay for the voters' pamphlet. I kind of remember that as part of the testimony.
Do you want to invite forward the Director of Elections? You may be in a better position to answer that than Mr. Stembridge. Well, take your best shot,
well, I would just say that the fees that go to voter pamphlet is not part of the revenue system. It would be handled by fiscal office because it's a fee part. And if they determine that it doesn't reach the level of minimal. So the fact that it says no fiscal impact means not very much fiscal impact.
Do you want to speak to that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director. Mr. Chairman, Representative Freeman, current law allows signatures to be submitted in lieu of those payments. So this bill just changes who can sign those petitions in lieu of the payments, where they have to reside. And so in our analysis, we don't expect very many more or very many fewer candidates to submit signatures instead of paying the fee. So that's why we indicated that there would be no negligible impact either way from this bill, because previous sessions that added the ability for us to accept signatures in lieu of those statements, that's when the fiscal impact was noted.
Any further discussion on the -6 amendments?
I'll just make a comment on it. I'm going to vote no, because I thought the whole intent of doing this was to generate extra revenue for the Secretary of State, that the current system was too costly because of the number of people that were getting signatures. This doesn't help that. We're not doing what we intended to do.
Although I would note, one of the concerns that we heard from the county clerk's panel that we had probably 3 months ago at this point, was this ended up being one of the basically unfunded mandates on them, unanticipated unfunded mandates the way we'd passed the law originally. They were ending up with a lot more signatures to verify and no dollars to go along with it. So I think one of the intents, and I think one of the outcomes of this amendment and this bill will be to reduce the work burden on the county clerks. Not so much a plus or minus fiscal impact on county clerks, but a work burden reduction. Any further discussion on the DAC 6 amendments? Objection to the DAC 6 amendments. Representative Freeman, any other objection to the DAC 6 amendments? We'll adopt the DAC 6 amendments. Co-Chair Olson.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3148 to the floor with the due pass and the DAC 6 amendments.
Co-Chair Olson moves House Bill 3148 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Representative Wainard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a no vote on the bill today, and I remain concerned about the $750 cost that we currently have in statute that was done, I think, in the last session to file for office. I think that's somewhat of an incumbent protection device, and that's a very high bar. You know, as someone who talked to some people last time that were interested in running, that was a very difficult hurdle for people to overcome. Secondly, I find that there is something incongruent in the policy in this bill. If I pay the $750 fee out of my PAC, I can collect that money from anyone. If I choose, as long as they're a U.S. citizen, if I choose to collect signatures, which is essentially in lieu of the $750 payment, that must be from voters in my district. I'm not sure that I agree that there should be a differentiation there. Lastly, I'm not convinced that this really is going to save a lot of time for county clerks. I have a district that's in both Clackamas and Washington County. It will take the clerks some time, if I submit signatures, to figure out if the people who I have given them on the Clackamas County list live somewhere else in Clackamas County or live in my district. And I don't see that as being particularly different than if I had just brought them a list of 80 people who had signed my petition who live somewhere in Clackamas County, which is what the current law requires me to do. They simply have to check whether those people are on their voter rolls. Now they have to check and make sure that they're actually in House District 26 as well. So I just don't see the savings that's going to be there. For those reasons, I will be opposing the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Freeman.
I would just say I'm not opposed to the policy as much as the intent. I mean, the idea was to cut down on the number of people that did this so the Secretary of State could pay for the voter's pamphlet. That was the intent. If there's no revenue difference, it's not going to help the Secretary of State. I don't see why we're doing it. So for that reason, I'll be a no.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, Amy, would you call the roll?
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
No.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
No.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye.
Motion carries, and we will ask Representative Cannon to carry that bill. Let's open, for purpose of getting updated, again, we don't have a fiscal, but I'll open a work session on House Bill 3452. And Representative Barnhart, well, actually,
thank you.
Mr. Stembridge, first of all, just remind us what the bill is, and then we'll ask Representative Barnhart to bring us up to speed.
Mr. Chairman, this is the bill that creates the three-member Oregon Finance Credit Board to make state funds available for venture capital for Oregon businesses for the purpose of furthering economic development. When you heard this bill on the 30th of March, you were looking at the Dash 3 amendments, which replaced the bill. So we really didn't look at the original bill. You just looked at the Dash 3 amendments. And you have today the Dash 8 and the Dash 9 amendments, which are not very far different from the Dash 3. And I believe you have copies of the 8 and 9, and I believe I'll let Representative Barnhart describe the Dash 8 and the Dash 9.
Please.
Thank you. One thing to note is that we changed the name of this organization to the Oregon Economic Development Finance Authority. I'll let someone else come up with the acronym for that. The major changes between the 3 and the 8 and 9 are essentially to reduce the authority of the board in some minor extent.
We suggest that, for example, on page 2, that the board not be given the authority to define by rule any additional financial institutions. And so that material is left out on where it would have been on line 8 in the older version. We suggested leaving out the word community in section 3, subsection 2C, before the word bank, because there's no definition of the word of the term community bank. And we suggested leaving out the material that again gives additional authority in subsection 11 on page 5, where in the threes it said that it gives you the bank or the sorry the authority. The authority to write rules to limit loans and other obligations the authority makes and authorizes or undertakes, because those are already done by the sideboards in the existing funds that the authority is attempting to write contracts about. Finally, on the last page of the bill, there is an addition in the dash 8s that makes it clear that the report that we're talking about is a report that is related to the duties and policies of the authority and not something else, which was essentially undefined in the earlier amendment. The only difference between the 8 and the 9 amendment, by the way, the treasurer likes the dash 8 amendment better than the dash 9. The only difference is, again, on that last page, when the section 5 on the report that's to be made back to the legislature is reformatted into three areas and restated. And essentially, the only substantive difference, I think, is that it asks the authority to recommend whether or not the authority should continue to exist beyond 2015, sort of a soft sunset, as it were. I think I concur with the Treasury that the reality is that if these are two very busy people, and if they don't think this authority is of any use to them, they'll come back and ask the legislature to dissolve it. I would note that there is one additional issue that the Oregon Bankers Association has raised, and that has to do with the composition of the advisory board, advisory council, when they suggested that the additional qualifier for the bank officers of banks and the officers of credit unions, that the additional qualifier that at least 75% of the officers in the state should be removed, would essentially, in effect, allow the appointment of people from the large national banks if that were done. It's my view that to do that would risk at least a substantial change in what the point of this organization is, and that is to strengthen our relationship with the local economic development. That's what the point of the bill is. And so I opposed that change, and we did not include it in either the dash 8s or the dash 9s. I understand we have the revenue statement, which is a no revenue fiscal statement's not in yet. I'm still discussing what that ought to contain, and I'm hoping that the committee will hold this over and consider it when that statement is in.
And if you have the ability to decide what fiscal statements contain, I have a couple other bills I'd like to talk to you about.
Thank you.
After that.
Part of it has to do, Mr. Chair, with how the Business Oregon thinks about the timing of the ramping up of this operation. My suspicion is it's going to take quite a while, during which the leaders of the Business Oregon, the leaders of the Treasury and the Governor's Office, are going to have to figure out how to deal with these contracts that the bill establishes as their purpose in being. And until that is well underway, I don't expect them to be in a position where they're going to need to hire staff or do other things for investment purposes, because there's nothing to invest. Of course, when there is a fiscal, it will not relate to the general fund, but rather to other funds, because they will pay for these costs for the with the management fees that they earn.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Barnhart? Did you want, is there any information the Treasurer's Office wants to weigh in on today, or? Do you have a question for the Treasurer's Office?
Yes.
Why don't you go ahead and come forward, Mike, very briefly. Representative Holby.
Just real quick, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm curious whether the Treasurer's Office sees any negative impact to having the soft sunset versus not having a soft sunset in this bill.
Co-Chair Hunt, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer. To the question, we obviously, as Representative Barnhart said, prefer the dash 8s without the soft sunset. Representative Barnhart, I think, carried our concern is that the governor, the treasurer, and presumably the third member will be fully aware that they're able to recommend their own dissolution if they feel the plan's not working. But to make that a stated factor, almost a default position, that this may not work in 5 years, we think kind of belies the intent of the measure, which is that we feel that this is something that needs to be permanent, that we need some coordination in our economic development efforts, and that is not intended to be something that happens for several years and then wraps up. We have a deadline to coordinate for a certain amount of time and then say, well, we've done that and we do not need to coordinate anymore and we can all go home. We think that this is something that ought to be lasting, but if it is not working for whatever reason, we certainly have the ability to acknowledge that and wrap it up.
Any other questions for Mike? Great. So we will await the fiscal. Fortunately, the fiscal, we're catching up in fiscal land with because all the other committees have cleared out their backlog.
And Mr. Chair, they're close enough so that they suggested that it might have been available this afternoon. So I don't think there's any reason not to simply carry this over rather than trying to reschedule it later, if that's
I think we're going to carry that over to next Wednesday as well, and that will give us time to get it and to read it. Thank you very much. Mike, close the work session on House Bill 3455, and we are...
We carry these bills over, or has that been announced?
Didn't I already say we're carrying over 3576? Yeah.
Yes, and in addition, we're carrying them over 1 week, so we're okay.
Yep. No other further business. We're adjourned.
Okay.